Olha só. So, a lot of activity already. It's only 9 o'clock. So let's see, that I would like to, my preference would be to reverse the order today, to reboot our minds, restart, come back to equilibrium. So let's start the day with shamatha. Of course, set your motivation. Always good. Always good at the beginning. Set the motivation, the most meaningful one you can bring to mind. Then let's slip right into shamatha this afternoon. Then we'll, like throwing a ball from the morning to the afternoon, we'll end. Oh, I suspect with loving kindness would be good, a good place to end. Okay? And dedication of merit. So let's have a quiet session. Un lasso. During the first year that I lived in Dharamsala, almost 40 years ago, actually exactly 40 years ago, I'd only been there a few months, and I was staying at the home of the Dalai Lama's personal physician, Yishudendan, and was already a little bit of a liaison between all the Westerners who came to Dharamsala and him, if they needed any medical care, it's kind of like through me, because nobody in the household spoke English, apart from me. And after just a few months, then a woman was brought to our door, young woman, like 20 years old, 19, German woman, happened to be German. And she was schizophrenic. She was utterly psychotic. So you can just raving crazy, and talking, incessantly talking, and very unhappy. I felt the devil was inside of her, so very, very sad case. And she and her boyfriend had hitchhiked, taken buses and whatever, all the way from Germany to India, overland. And on the way, I think someplace in Afghanistan, they were taking drugs all the way across. And she broke her hip. She fell out, I don't know how it happened, but she broke her hip. And she's in a really primitive circumstances. They reset the hip. They set the hip, but they set it wrong. And so then she was limping and taking more drugs, LSD and stuff like that, and then made her way to Dharamsala. And then in Dharamsala, you remember what it was like. It's a very intense place. And for whatever reasons, and I have no idea what they were, then she just went in Dharamsala. She went completely crazy. And so her boyfriend left her. And so there she was on her own. And somebody brought her to Yishudendan's clinic, thinking, well, he's a healer, she's sick, so maybe he can do something. And I was the only way to get to Yishudendan, if you're a Westerner, so the guy could speak a little bit of English, a little bit of Tibetan. And so he had medication for lung, for prana, but she wasn't really interested in taking it, she was suicidal. So, very sad situation. Very sad situation. As I recall, I think I spent one whole night just sitting with her and listening to her talk constantly. There was no break. It seemed really quite literally like every thought that came to her mind would come out her mouth. And it was just babble. It was incoherent. It was frightened. It was unhappy. And this whole notion of the devil being inside of her was running through the whole thing. And so, really, there didn't seem to be any benefit from the medicine. I'm not even sure she was taking it. So after some time, not very long, maybe a couple of days, then old Dharma friend, we've known each other for a couple of months, Gavin Kilty, he and I, wonderful, very dedicated Dharma practitioner, still now a very good translator, an Englishman. He and I, thought, well, she's not getting any help, she's suicidal, we don't know what to do, she's been abandoned by the people with her, and so let's go down and see if some Lama can help her. So he took one hand, I took the other hand, and we walked her down the mountain from the Cloud Ganj down to the library, Tibetan Work and Archives, hoping to be able to meet with Kapje Tishan Rinpoche. This I've mentioned before, one of the tutors of the Dalai Lama, a great holy man, incredibly accomplished, contemplative. And he just had such blessing with him, just being in his presence. So we went to his home, but he was in deep retreat, couldn't get to him. So then, we thought, well, let's go to Geshe-Ngan Taige, wonderful monk, great scholar, a very accomplished meditator. Maybe he can do something. He was not there. He wasn't there either. So then we bumped into his interpreter, Kusha Shapa Rinpoche. And Shapa Rinpoche took one look, immediately saw, okay, this woman is in dire need of help. And none of us knew what to do. But Shapa Rinpoche said, well, maybe I got something, maybe he can help a little bit. Let's see. And so he went back to his room and then came out again. He had a little cloth bag full of basically relics. And these were like little bits of hair, clipping of clothes, a little bit of piece of cloth, it looked like what you sweep off the floor, really. You know, it didn't look sacred, but it was just little stuff. You know? But everything in his bag, I mean, there's no joking about this, everything in his bag was from really some very highly accomplished lama, including Kapchi Chitra Rinpoche. So he brought this out, he said, well, this is blessed material. Maybe this will help. Who knows? In the meantime, this woman is completely out of it. I mean, she spoke kind of okay English, but she was not engaging with what we're doing. She was in a world of her own. And so this is what I saw, okay? With no exaggeration, and I've told this story many times, and my memory is actually very clear here. And so Kujyajapa Rinpoche, then here's this woman, she's kind of like, blah, 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 like just out of her mind. Kujyajapa Rinpoche takes out a pinch of this stuff, and puts it, I think, on a little mirror, a little platform. He put it there, and then he took out a match, lit the match, and then set this on fire. And as soon as it was aflame, then he blew it out. And so it would smoke. So smoke would come up. And then he just immediately put it under the nose of this young woman and said, breathe in. And she was enough engaged with us that she heard him, she understood him, right? Lisa Kim was okay. That he put it under her nose, and then she would, like that, she breathed in. And of course, we're all watching her, three of us. And in a matter of seconds, you saw a face that anybody looking at her face would say, this one was out of her mind. She is psychotic. And in a matter of seconds, her face was like Anila's face right now. Just relaxed, calm, still, hopefully mine. Just good. Such just, it was just immediate that she was just calm, composed, clear. And it lasted for seconds and seconds and seconds. And I don't recall her saying anything. She was just completely like that. And then you can almost see, I don't think it's my imagination, you can almost see something like a tremor, something wobbling, something starting to vibrate and go out of control. And she was starting to lose it. And then she turned to Shabha Rinpoche and she said, please do that again. For a moment, everything was okay. But you can't keep on having people smell smoke. And so then she, you know, slip back into her psychosis. So it was remarkable. It was not a cure. Eventually then, shortly thereafter, then she was taken down to Delhi and they got her on a plane and she went back to Germany. I hope she found a good full recovery. We simply did not have the ward, the professionalism. We had no way to help her effectively, let alone a person like me. I have no expertise in anything. But that really struck my mind that this was not a case of a placebo effect. She was so far out of it that she could not engage with him. All she could get was sniff. And that she could do. But see that immediate transformation and then her comment, for a moment everything was okay. Can I do that again? That was quite remarkable. So why do I tell that story right now? It made a deep impression on me. But over the course of the rest of this day, you may on various occasions lose your mind. It's called OCDD, right? Where if, and I hope this technology will never be developed, if there were developed technology by some really crackerjack neuroscientist, maybe Jason will do it for you, who develops a really fantastic software program that can map the intricate activities of your brain, of just the electrochemical events in the brain, but like a Rosetta Stone, some incredibly sophisticated software, that would translate the electrochemical events in your brains into the images that are arising in your mind and the thoughts that are occurring in your mind. So it would be a translation device. And so you put on a little helmet and then it would just pick up exactly what's occurring in your brain and translate that into the words and images in your mind. And this little contraption would come with a speaker and a video screen above your head. So that anybody looking at you could see exactly what's arising in your mind, the images coming to mind, and they'd hear the soundtrack of exactly what you're thinking as you're looking from one person to another and saying, oh, it's very nice to see you, Paola. How are you doing? It's a very lovely, lovely show you have. And meanwhile, you know, the background chatter. And so if there was some dictator that forced everyone to wear that to make sure he could, you know, that would, of course, entail the end of human civilization. But, of course, that will probably never happen. But were it to happen, then the degree of our own mental balance would be broadcast to the world. And how how different we would appear to the people around us versus this psychotic woman, for which we couldn't see every image in her mind, but we could pretty much hear every thought because it came out of her mouth with no editing. As far as I could tell, it was just free flow, boom, 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 almost constant. And so there would be the visual, auditory and visual display of how balanced our minds really are. And it might be something, kind of a technology we wouldn't want to wear in public. And so, but nevertheless, now that we've had 8 weeks to be monitoring our minds and seeking enhanced sanity, then whether today or the next, you know, week, year, decade, half century or what have you, there are bound to be occasions when, to varying degrees, we do have a sense from the privileged perspective of our own awareness that our minds are deranged, out of order, imbalanced, obsessive, compulsive, and delusional. In which case, when we recognize that metacognitively, right now, my mind is not balanced, then we don't have a little bag full of relics to smell, so that we can say for a moment everything was okay. But we are breathing. And we are settling the mind in its natural state, and we have awareness of awareness. So you may have just had an argument with somebody in your home, and your mind is caught up in some mental affliction. But then if you can breathe, for a moment everything can be okay. And keep on coming back to that point of clarity, of composure, of balance, as many times throughout the course of the day as possible. And that's bound to serve you well. Okay? Even if it's no cure. And shamatha isn't a cure. Shamatha is management. It's a management of symptoms, right? Very effective management of symptoms, but that's all it is. Stop managing, and the symptoms will come back, right? But better, as every psychotherapist knows, it's much better to manage symptoms than to have them completely unmanifest, whether it's ADHD, whether it's psychosis, whether it's whatever it may be. It's a tremendous boon, and if it has to take place by drugs, let it be drugs. But it's certainly a great advantage to manage symptoms, and it's an infinitely greater strategy to heal from the root. So, samatha is contemplative symptom management. And for a moment, it really feels like everything's okay. And we just have as many of those moments strung together as possible until we have a sufficient platform to practice vipassana effectively, and then we go for the cure. To the root. And cut the root of delusion. Yeah, yeah. Enjoy your day.